My name's Chris Cole. I'm the coordinator of Drone Wars UK. We focus on the use and development of remotely controlled drones, military drones, and the use of autonomy, growing use of autonomous weapons, and space. The militarization of space is very much connected with the growing use of drones and AI. And what else to say? And other emerging technology, really. So we focus really on the emerging technology. We've been focusing on drones for 15 years, and it continues to grow and develop.
Yeah, well, what worries me, and I think millions of other people, is this aspect of the use of AI and drones to target. We've seen this in Gaza and elsewhere, and it seems to me, Chris, and maybe you could just give us your considered opinion on all that sort of aspect, is that we've got, in warfare, you know, you have to actually get people to kill people in the past. Now it seems we can get AI to kill, to do the killing. So the potential for this to run off the scale, I mean, it's like a 1960s sci-fi film. You know, it seems to be almost they keep saying this is an inevitable thing, but it seems to be being done deliberately, so to sort of take the human element even out of warfare.
Yeah, I mean, there's a real push towards autonomous warfare, increasingly so over the last 5 years. But there are kind of two aspects to this. It's important to understand there are two ways that autonomy is coming into the kill chain, if you like. One is the idea of making the weapons themselves, whether they're drones or aircraft or guns or artillery, whatever, to make them much more autonomous. And that involves what's called on-edge computing. So you put the computing system and with the AI algorithms actually in the weapons themselves. So that's one way. And that's being developed rapidly, but it isn't working as well at the moment as they would like. But the other way that autonomy is coming into this kill chain is through processing and analyzing huge amounts of data to produce targets for weaponry, whether they be autonomous weapons or, you know, human controlled weapons. So it's very important to be aware that autonomy is coming in both of those ways. We've seen it most visually, I suppose, most shockingly, Israel's use in Gaza over the last few years, with various programs such as, you know, Lavender and Gospel and Where's Daddy, those programs to develop targets. So the former head of the Israeli Defense Force, for example, was saying that they would perhaps use data to develop 100 targets in Gaza a year. Now they're developing 100 per day. So there is this kind of real, you know, fast advance towards creating huge numbers of targets. Now, whether those targets are legitimate and appropriate, there is a whole different question about that. We know algorithms, AI, get these details wrong so many times. And we've seen huge numbers of civilians killed in Gaza. But we're also seeing this kind of processing of data spreading. And the US, of course, is increasingly use algorithms and AI to develop targets. And there was some suggestion that the killing of 130 schoolgirls in a strike in Iran, in Minab, was down to AI. It's very difficult to know whether that's true at this stage because there's very little transparency about what's ever going on. So AI is rapidly coming into this type of warfare, and it's increasing the distance. And you're right, it is in part to erode the human from the kill chain. The military planners see humans as far too slow, far too human to take part in warfare. So there is a desire to erode the human from the kill chain.
I wonder, will the AI become whistleblowers, as obviously the military have in the past over war crimes?
Yeah. Well, I mean, we must remember that AI, we talk about AI, and there is this kind of understanding of AI as like a HAL character from 2001, the movie, that this kind of all-knowing, all super intelligent entity. But of course, the reality is the AI that we have at the moment is only machine learning. It's only programs. It's only algorithms processing data. So it doesn't have wisdom. It doesn't have intelligence. It doesn't have knowledge. It's merely processing data. So we must remember that. There is, the military planners argue that general AI, the kind of super intelligence, is coming soon. But many, many scientists and technicians who are working on that say that we are very, very far away from general AI. At the moment, we're just on machine learning processing data.
Yeah, so in a way, this is almost like a kind of a bit of spin. This the idea that there's any kind of
Absolutely.
close to real intelligence. Anyway, look, if you look at the AI investment, you're looking at around about $1 trillion a year is just going into research and development into this potentially really horrific technology, which could take the human element out of life on Earth. Some would argue that this is good. In fact, one that does is an old school friend of mine from the 1970s, Nick Land. He lives out in Shanghai these days after doing philosophy at Warwick University, being a professor there after he left school. And he's just been flown by a top AI hedge fund guy out to California to give a speech there. And he's penned something called the Dark Enlightenment. The idea is, Chris, that the enlightenment of the 1700s was all about technology. You know, all the steam technology, the railways, goodness knows what was being put together then, steel, ship built, you know. Everything was kind of accelerating back in those days. Now, he seems to want, and a lot of these tech giants, people like Sam Altman, love his stuff, are going on about, well, this is a dark enlightenment, and there is an inevitability to this super high tech, almost like four dimensional technology taking over with the, you know, we, I think it was back in the 1980s, the first chess computers started beating the grandmasters. And they are seeing this technology is so valuable and so important because it can win wars. If you can imagine, you know, a game of chess is like a war game. If you can switch the AI into a war and get the AI to fight the war for you, it's almost as if no human could win that war, only the AI could win it. I just wonder if what you make of this aspect, this dark enlightenment, inevitable aspect to all of this.
To be honest, I'm very skeptical about it because all the tech bros, as you say, are kind of gung ho for this. But the actual technology is still very poor. We're still very far away from this idea that an AI can beat humans. Of course, they can process data. For example, in like a game of chess, as you say, AI can process data very fast, very quickly, and kind of work out what the next move is. But in a kind of human environment, in a battlefield or whatever, as all the military generals say, strategy disappears on the first day, because things change so rapidly. Of course, the kind of military tech bros, Helsing, Anduril, Palantir, all these guys are extolling the virtues of AI and saying how fantastic it is. And all the kind of politicians and senior military officials who know very little about this. I mean, one of the concerns that we have is that so much funding, as you say, is going into this. And when you talk to senior military officials, when you talk to politicians, they don't understand this at all. So they're being bamboozled by these AI companies into spending huge amounts of public money on this stuff. And many times it just comes to nothing. So I am rather skeptical. At the moment, with all what that we see about that kind of AI is going to change warfare and change humanity. Certainly, at the moment, huge amounts of public funds are going into it, but we will see over the next decade what happens.
Yeah, or if they take over, we won't see. But anyway, look, I'm being a bit flippant there. But how does this all link in with things like facial recognition technology? Because I noticed there's Britain seems to be in some ways leading the way here. You know, parts of London all being covered with facial recognition. It's almost as if this the potential, you know, military technology is being rolled out into civilian areas.
Well, very much so. I mean, there is a whole security industry very much linked in with the military side of things. And, there is a real push to use AI, and AI is, being sold as being able to bring security to the streets of London as it is to kind of to the streets of Baghdad. But the reality is, as I constantly say, when these kind of technologies are tested in the real world, they fail time and time again. And so, if they work 70% of the time, they get the kind of facial recognition right, that means like 30% of the time they're wrong, and people are being arrested and their lives are being disrupted through mistakes.
Yeah, we had
So,
recently at Sainsbury's in London, who approached a customer and said, well, "We have records of you shoplifting here. You know, we've done facial recognition, and you so you can't." And they just refused to give him any kind of information, and he's taking them to court. I mean, yeah. Anyway, look, on.
anybody who used his ChatGPT or computers, the Google to kind of try and find information, enormous amounts of the time it's actually wrong, or a significant amount of the time, I should say, it's actually wrong.
Well,
So
yeah.
when we're kind of putting this out into the real world in terms of kind of security and warfare, it's incredibly dangerous.
Yeah, and it's wrong, as you say. Maybe Donald Trump's tactics are AI tactics because they don't seem to be making any sense and they don't seem to be working. Anyway, look, just to this Iran war, this most recent monstrosity that's been launched upon the public. But many people are starting to wonder, well, do we get a say in any of this? Because none of it really seems to make sense, apart from a rather botched attempt to grab resources. And anyway, look, the RAF Fairford in Gloucestershire is being used by the United States, even though Keir Starmer, the Prime Minister, said that it wasn't going to be. To launch these bomber attacks, but there are other things going on in the background at Fairford, such as an attempt by the Americans to start using this as a drone launch point. So maybe you could just address the drone aspect of Fairford first. What's going on there?
Well, so the US forces have this kind of policy called ACE, Agile Deployments, basically. I forget what the acronym is, but the US wants to deploy various aircraft at various bases around the world at different times. So they've picked a number of bases, including RAF Fairford in Gloucestershire, as you say, to be a base from which they can fly their drone operations. So last year, for the first time, they deployed huge Global Hawk drones to RAF Fairford in Gloucestershire and operated them there. They flew from RAF Fairford, flew across Europe towards the Middle East. They then turned their transponders off, so we didn't see exactly what they were doing, and then returned to Sigonella in Italy. The US has also applied to the Civil Aviation Authority to fly their armed Reaper drones from RAF Fairford in Gloucestershire. That kind of application has been paused because there has been concern about that. Not necessarily about what the drones will be doing, but perhaps because it will interfere with domestic flights and routes for people's holidays. So So RAF Fairford is planned by the US to be a US drone base. It's progressing slowly. They have begun to fly, as I say, Global Hawk surveillance drones from there, and they are planning to applying to fly Reaper drones from there. But we're obviously opposing that. We're involved. We're a stakeholder in the consultation on that. We will continue to oppose that. But as you say, Fairford, as at the moment, is being used, has been being used to launch bombers, B-52s and B-1 bombers, carrying huge bombs, 2,000-pound, 5,000-pound, so-called bunker buster bombs, have been flying from RAF Fairford twice a day for 6 weeks, and carrying out strikes on Iran. As you say, Keir Starmer initially refused the base to be used to be, because, normally when we kind of come on these programs, I kind of say that there are kind of serious questions about the legality of these strikes. But this time there are no questions. There is a wide acceptance that the US and Israeli war on Iran is completely unlawful, illegal under international law. And it's not just us who are saying that, but senior international law practitioners and scholars, and of course, the UN Secretary General, all have been clear that this air war is completely unlawful. But Keir Starmer and the British government said that they would allow the US to conduct what they call defensive strikes rather than offensive strikes. But that's a nonsense and completely hard to verify. We are fairly sure that the UK government are not even being told what the targets are that the bombers are taking off. So how do they know that they're so-called defensive strikes? But obviously, at the moment, there is a shaky ceasefire, which came in 2 weeks ago, and there's been all sorts of messaging about whether the strikes will continue. There are the 18 huge bombers, big buff, they're called. Their kind of colloquial term is bug, big ugly fuckers, are at the airface and still there, and still may take off any moment. So it's right that we go to Fairford. We've been at Fairford Air Base protesting there about five times over the last few months, and we're going there again tomorrow, the 25th of April. And there is a coach from Bristol heading to Fairford, so it would encourage people, if they're able, to come along on that coach. Contact Bristol C&D to book a ticket. It goes from Anchor Street, is that it? In Anchor Road, in the centre of Bristol tomorrow. But do contact Bristol C&D to book a place on the coach.
Okay, I mean, you say you trotted out there, missions from Gloucestershire to Iran. This is a hell of a long way. And I know these aircraft are being told they're not allowed to overfly European countries. They've got to go all the way down the east coast of the Atlantic, down to Gibraltar, and then fly along the Mediterranean, avoiding national airspace of various countries on the way. I mean, this must be, I'm just imagining, maybe about 4,000 miles. I mean, do they get, then they have to get refueled, I imagine, on the way, which is a bit of a dicey process too, with all these bombs on board. I've also heard and seen, and one of the stories had disappeared just a few m minutes after it popped up, that some of these aircraft have radioed emergency signals, so they've got problems of one sort or another, maybe with depressurization, pressurization of the cabin. And I mean, it just sounds to me like this is being done rather flippantly by the United States, but for the air crew involved, it's quite a dicey process getting all the way there and back.
Yes, I'm sure it's extremely onerous for them to carry out these missions, but I would argue that it's more onerous for the people living under these kind of thousands of tons of bombs that are being dropped. And yes, of course, it's dangerous flying these huge aircraft stuffed with thousands of pounds of explosives across the globe is extremely dangerous and extremely damaging. And so that's why we need to stop. That's why we need to go to Fairford and to challenge our government and to challenge the military, and to kind of, peel away the myth that these are actual RAF bases. I mean, these are only British bases in name only. We talked to when talking to the police when we're at the gates of the base, they say they themselves are not allowed to go within, within the kind of only into a short way. There are kind of inner limits into which they're not allowed to go. So these are US bases in all but name, here in the UK, and we need to challenge that and sweep the bases away, not just the name, the fact that they're a British base, but to sweep the American bases away themselves.
Yeah, so when it comes to it, surely it seems to be the wrong time to do a demo like this, Chris, during a ceasefire. The idea is okay, this is great because they're not going. So why do a demo now?
Well, we've been demonstrating when during the active phase of bombing, but this is only a fragile ceasefire. The bombers are still at Fairford. They could take off any moment. They could take off today before the demo on Saturday. So it's right that we continue to highlight that the bombers are there. It's right that we continue to highlight that this base is an integral part of the US war machine. And it's right to demand that the base be closed down.
Who are the various groups taking part in this?
Drone Wars is part of a kind of has been, formed this small little group called Fairford Action with a number of local groups, Oxford C&D, Oxfordshire Peace Campaign. And we're also working nationally with C&D, Campaign for Nuclear Disarmament, and Stop the War. Stop the War. So this demonstration tomorrow is a coalition of groups coming together to call for an end to the bombing, or no more bombing on Iran, and for the US base to be closed down.
Finally, Chris, look, we were told when this all first started, the weekend at the end of February, that Britain wasn't going to allow the Americans to use our bases here, and yet it just happened. I mean, it was quite bizarre, actually. I wonder, do you think the Americans just were sticking two fingers up to Starmer and saying, well, we don't care what you think, we're going to use them anyway?
Well, it's very hard to know, but certainly there was a huge pressure put on the government by the US to allow it to use Fairford. Fairford is a very important base in Europe. It's much closer to the Middle East than the United States is, so they wanted to fly. You were saying it was onerous for the air crew to fly from Fairford. It would be much more difficult for them to fly directly from the United States. So you can imagine the pressure that was put on the British government to allow this base to be used.
What I'm
Keir
suggesting
Starmer.
here is that they didn't bother trying to put pressure on the British government. They just y started using the base and daring the British to do anything about it.
Well, yeah, I mean that's speculation. I mean, I don't know if you've got any evidence for that, but certainly there would have been pressure put on the government to allow it to be used.
Okay, Chris Cole from Drone Wars UK. Can you just give us your website, how people can follow you, get on your mailing lists, that sort of thing?
Yep, Drone Wars UK, dronewars.net is our website, dronewars.net.
And do you have a sort of a newsletter, anything like that?
We have various things. If people want to contact us, we'll put them on. Certainly, if they're more interested in what's going on at Fairford, we have a mailing list about that. So do drop us an email, info@dronewars.net, and we can share information with people.
Okay, Chris Cole, thanks very much for joining us.
You're welcome, Tony.